Welcome to the Not Old Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelsang. Happy holidays to everyone, and today's show is in the holiday theme. I really think you're going to enjoy this. Charles Dickens is well known for A Christmas Carol, especially this time of year, but also for his gripping plots, vivid characters, and penetrating social commentary. The prolific author of Oliver Twist, David Copperfield, Great Expectations, A Tale of Two Cities, as well as A Christmas Carol, enjoyed unprecedented popularity during his lifetime and remains one of the world's most beloved storytellers. Today we are with actor Scott Sater, who will later in the show be reading a special Dickens selection chosen by he and author Daniel Stashower, who's also with us. Daniel Stashower is an award-winning author and has researched Dickens, digging deeply into Charles Dickens' life and legacy.
It's a tremendously interesting life as well as career. And one of the things that for me has been so enjoyable about digging deeply into Dickens' background to prepare for this presentation is seeing the way in which many of the events from his life, and particularly his early life, are played out again and again in the pages of books that, you know, we know so well today.
That, of course, was our guest today, award-winning author Daniel Stashower, who, along with Scott Sater, will be appearing at the Smithsonian Associates Program December 5th at the Ripley Center. This program, by the way, is sold out, but if you'd like to get on the waiting list, please check out the Not Old Better website for more details. As part of our Smithsonian Associates Art of Living series, we are joined today via Skype with Daniel Stashower and Scott Sater. Daniel Stashower, Scott Sater, happy holidays to both of you, and welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Daniel, my first question really is for you, and in my research I found books about Houdini, books about Arthur Conan Doyle, and you've won awards for your mystery novel, The Adventure of the Ectoplasmic Man. Out of all of that, what led you to Dickens at this point?
Well, it's funny you should mention both Conan Doyle and Houdini, because in a way they both lead to Charles Dickens. I mean, Conan Doyle clearly was a terrific storyteller, as Dickens was, but of course we remember Houdini primarily as a performer. Well, Dickens was both in a very serious way. There was a time when he was a young man when he wanted to be an actor, and he said that at one stage he went to the theater every single night for 3 years. I mean, he was terrifically engaged with the theater, and later he wrote plays and directed plays, and of course he was a particularly effective performer of his own work. His lectures, drawn from his own books, were enormously popular in his day, and you can see it in his work. And for me, the idea of this writer, who's obviously a towering figure in literature, who also has an actor's sense, an actor's sensibility, was enormously appealing.
We're joined by Scott Sater. Scott's going to do a little bit of the reading, but Daniel, I have another question for you about Dickens. Tell us a little bit about the man, the career, maybe some of the ups and downs that he experienced, because I think that's a story that is worth hearing about.
It's a tremendously interesting life as well as career. And one of the things that for me has been so enjoyable about digging deeply into Dickens' background to prepare for this presentation is seeing the way in which many of the events from his life, and particularly his early life, are played out again and again in the pages of books that, you know, we know so well today. There's one in particular. Dickens had had a fairly happy childhood up to about the age of 12. And when he was 12 years old, his father, who worked as a clerk in the for the Navy, and they traveled around quite a bit, his father's expenses got away from him. He fell into debt, and he was taken to the Marshalsea Debtors Prison in London. And as was the custom at the time, his wife and most of their children went into prison with him, which is incredible to think about today. But Dickens, who was 12 years old at the time, was sent to work, and he worked in a place called the in a blacking factory, meaning a place that made boot polish or shoe polish. And he spent long, grueling days pasting labels onto pots of boot blacking. And the descriptions of it are just horrifying. They're just as grim can be. And at one point, the story goes, the location was moved so that it was actually in a place where they were working in front of a large window and people on the street could pass by and look in at these children, street urchins, these ragamuffins at their work. So you can imagine, not only are they doing these horrible jobs, but their misery is being compounded by the fact that they're a spectacle for people walking by on the street. It just sounds horrific. Well, of course, as he became a celebrated writer, again and again, he drew attention to the misery of people of all kinds, but particularly children under these impoverished conditions. And you see it in David Copperfield. You see it in Oliver Twist. You see again and again children going through the kinds of hardships that he himself endured.
That's fascinating. He really seemed to care a great deal for the underclass and the poverty that was going on in Victorian London, that and the, even their powerlessness. Here in Washington, D.C., of course, we're familiar with the term red tape. And that's even credited to Dickens in some ways, as well as the term Dickensian. Dickens was really influential in a lot of ways. Why, Daniel, was he so important?
Well, I think you've put your finger right on it with the business about red tape, which is something you see in Bleak House and in other novels. He not only was an incredibly popular storyteller, he also, by virtue of drawing attention to some of the social issues that he saw as important, he was a prominent social reformer. You remember, you'll know here in America, there was a figure named Jacob Riis, who was a photographer and a writer who came out with a very influential series of writings and photographs under the I believe I'm getting this right, under the title of How the Other Half Lives. And for the first time, people were seeing and reading about these conditions of utter poverty here in the United States. Well, Dickens had already been doing that in the United Kingdom. He, through his work and through dramatizing it, he was drawing attention to the hardships and conditions of Britain's poor and underserved, and in particular, because he was making these tremendously effective fictions out of it, he was doing it in a way that engaged the sympathies of people who were in a position to do something about it.
Fascinating time.
Very fascinating time. We, of course, are with Daniel Stashower and Scott Sater. Daniel and Scott are so kind to join us today. They will be at the Ripley Center with Smithsonian Associates program presenting on December 5th, the Dickens Without the Humbug program. It is sold out. You can get on a waiting list. We'll put that waiting list phone number into our show notes today. But Scott Sater, thank you so much for joining us as well.
Happy to be here.
Knowing that Dickens, and Daniel mentioned this a little bit, did live reading, he was very passionate actor and did so much in terms of his own work and presenting it to the public. What is it that you find about Dickens that's so appealing?
Well, I think part of the reason I'm invited to these experiences is the pleasure of the spoken word. And I think to have an author deliver his own work is a fascinating both an affirmation of their work, I think, and also probably a way that they could be judged critically. And I find it fascinating that he was willing to do that. I also think, as Dan said, you know, the theater was tremendously important to him, and having it being very tremendously important to me, I think I can certainly relate to his joy in the theater and the ability take on different personalities, kind of explore a compassion that the theater allows us to do, I think is a great tribute to the theater. So that's part of the reason why I'm so excited about this. We were talking about sharing one of these pieces with you, and Dan mentioned this episode where he worked so arduously as a young boy, and there's a little short piece here where he talks about having to be his own adult. You know, he was having to take care of himself as a very young child. So I thought I might share that with you.
Oh, that'd be great, Scott. Thank you.
I know I do not exaggerate, unconsciously and unintentionally, the scantiness of my resources or the difficulties of my life. I know that if a shilling were given to me, I spent it in a dinner or a tea. I know that I worked from morning until night with common men and boys, a shabby child. I know that I lounged about the streets, insufficiently and unsatisfactorily fed. I know that, but for the mercy of God, I might easily have been, for any care that was taken of me, a little robber or a little vagabond. I was so young and childish and so little qualified. How could I be otherwise? To undertake the whole charge of my own existence. My own exclusive breakfast of a penny loaf and a penny worth of milk I provided myself. I kept another small loaf and a modicum of cheese on a particular shelf of a particular cupboard to make my supper on when I came back at night. This made a hole in the 6 or 7 shillings, I know well. And I was out at the warehouse all day and had to support myself on that money all the week. From Monday morning until Saturday night, I had no advice, no counsel, no encouragement, no consolation, no assistance, no support of any kind from anyone that I can call to mind as I hope to go to heaven.
Wow. Well, Scott Sater, that's reflective of what you're going to be sharing on December 5th with the Smithsonian Associates Program and Daniel Stashower, the Dickens Without the Humbug Program. Is that right?
That's right. And one of the pleasures for me in participating and being part of this program is the pleasure of hearing Scott read these passages. Some of them we know, some of them we're familiar with, and some of them were, like the one he just read, less familiar. It's always a joy.
And especially this time of year. Daniel, thanks for all of that. What other adventures come to mind about Dickens? He's credited almost with inventing Christmas. Is that an accurate way of putting it about Dickens?
Yes, sure. And there's this movie in the theaters right now, as I'm sure you know, Dickens. The invention of Christmas. It's very interesting because, of course, this time of year our thoughts turn to Christmas Carol, and it's very interesting to read about what a huge role that played, not only in drawing attention to the holiday in ways that had not been done at the time, but also cementing some of the traditions that now we associate so strongly, so powerfully with this time of year. But Dickens' biographies are full of these unexpected twists and turns like this. And one of them that I was particularly struck by was he made 2 trips to the United States, the first one in 1842. And he'd been very, very excited about making the trip, about coming to America. But when he got here, he quickly soured on being in the United States. He was troubled by the institution of slavery that was so prevalent at the time, and also he found Americans in a lot of ways sort of slow, boorish, and uncouth, particularly when it came to chewing tobacco, which he found deeply offensive, and he couldn't understand how everywhere he went, the floors, the carpets, the walls were stained with tobacco juice. But there was one bright spot, and he was in Philadelphia, and a young writer wrote to him and asked for an interview. And Dickens was impressed and granted the interview, and in fact spoke to this writer twice. They met up in Philadelphia twice, and the writer was Edgar Allan Poe. And I love to think of the idea of Dickens and Edgar Allan Poe sitting down together and sort of talking shop. And there's one element of it that really jumps out at me. Poe was very well known at the time as a literary critic, and he had had some very, very good things to say about the Dickens novel, Barnaby Rudge. Interestingly, that novel featured a talking raven. And Poe, as you can imagine, kind of fixed on that detail. And in his writing about Barnaby Rudge, he drew attention to this loquacious bird, and he said, in a way, Dickens might have done more with it, and he said, its croakings might have been prophetically heard within the telling of the tale. And you can see how that detail was to loom large for Poe in a very short time.
Wonderful. Daniel Stashower, Scott Sayer, thanks so much for joining us. What a fascinating person Dickens is, so important in history and so important during this time of year, too, when we're remembering others and we're thinking about the upcoming holiday season. Certainly, you'll be at the Ripley Center December 5th, but thanks so much for joining us today.
It's a real pleasure, Paul. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thanks to our guests today, Daniel Stashower and Scott Sayer, who will be appearing at the sold-out event, Dickens Without the Humbug, December 5th, 2017, at the Ripley Center in Washington, D.C. A special thanks, of course, to the Smithsonian Associates for all their help today. And if you're interested in being placed on the waiting list, call the Smithsonian Associates directly at 202-633-3030. As usual, I'll post links to everything, including that phone number, on the website. And also, as usual, my thanks to you, the listeners, for joining me today. Your time is valuable, and I'm grateful you're spending some of it with me today. I'm always interested in feedback, and you can leave that at iTunes, Google Play, or send me an email at info@notold-better.com. That's info@notold-better.com. Stay tuned for our next show, another great one, as we talk about Better, the Not Old Better Show. Thanks to all, and happy holidays.